From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour is, if we are being honest, really a disconnection. We're talking about Rochester's children, students in RCSD, kids who might have been struggling before the pandemic. And then, of course, they were separated for so long from their friends and teachers and physical schools, classrooms. They did their best to figure out how to live and survive and learn. And now there is data, and in many ways, this has gone very badly. Rock the Future offers an annual report card. How are RCSD kids in particular doing? Are they staying in school more often? Are they graduating on time? Are they going to college? Do they have what they need to thrive? Do they have active and involved families? After nearly a decade of incremental progress, and in some ways dramatic progress, Rock the Future had an interesting choice. Some schools across the country, they do this kind of stuff and they've decided, you know, we're really not going to count the pandemic year. Everything was different. So much was off, sort of messed up and chaotic. But Rock the Future wanted to know just where we are as a community. Here are just a few examples. Nearly a decade ago, 24% of Rochester third graders were proficient on reading. Now it's 18%. How about middle grade math? Eighth graders proficient on state assessed math, 20% about a decade ago. Now it's 17%. High school graduation's up. It was 47% a decade ago. It's 68% now. That's good news. College ready, same. That's progress. 45% RCSD graduates college ready in English. That's a decade ago. Now it's 56%. College enrollment, though, is down. RCSD graduates enrolled in a two-year or four-year college within a year of high school graduation. It was 65% a decade ago. Now it's 53%. And I could go on here. I mean, chronic absence is obviously a problem. It was 38% chronically absent a decade ago. Now it's 38% for the elementary schools, 60% for secondary. It's tough to see this stuff, but you know what? It's honest. And there are people who've been working so hard, agencies pulling together, school administrators, teachers, to try to say, hey, we know where we are, but we know we can get back to the signs of progress that we've been experiencing leading up to this. The question is, what do you do about it? Well, let's talk about it. Chair of Rock the Future is Sean Nelms, who is with us here, of course, superintendent at East. Welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, Evan.
Also with us on the line is Stephanie Townsend, communications and coalition manager for the Children's Agenda, author of the State of Our Children report card. Stephanie, welcome back to the program.
Thank you so much, Evan.
And Kirsten Brown Warren is a parent leader with the Parent Engagement Collaborative Action Network. Kirsten, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Sean, I mentioned at the outset, and you and I talked briefly this morning, I mean, there are school districts who've just decided things are so far off because of the pandemic that if we're not going to measure, we're going to wait another year or so, let's get our bearings. Why did Rock the Future say we're not doing that? We're going to count everything right now.
I think it's important to be transparent about this crisis. And although we've seen improvements across the board, I want to honor that, you know, but we also have seen some of the indicators that might suggest that if we don't continue to focus on things like reading proficiency and making real-world connections so that students are graduating prepared to do college, career, work, whatever they choose, that, you know, we're going to create a new gap that we'll be talking about 10 years from now. So it's time to pause and be honest. We know that COVID was really tough, particularly for kids in the city who were not in person for those 18 months like some other schools were. So we're dealing with a new set of issues within our community. And I believe that we have to refocus and not continue to do the things that worked for the last crisis, but to shift and adjust to make sure that we are catching students up, but also getting them prepared for a different world that they're going to have in the next few years. And so we have to be honest and transparent. I think we're well past sugarcoating issues within this community because we see the impact of that when we do. We see kids are disconnected and not being productive citizens. And so we have to be honest about those things.
Let me ask you just briefly, how long is it going to take to even get us back to where we were in 2019? Could that be done in a year? Is it going to take more than that?
Well, it's definitely going to take more than a year because, you know, each situation is different. I would say that, you know, we have an influx of funding coming in from the federal government. We hear about that, you know, CARES funding. And it really was designed for us to rapidly catch up. And so we have to look at models within the community. I think East is an example of that. And there's other examples also, particularly that are structured in urban settings like Rochester, that we could see some rapid growth. It took us 6 years at East to get to a point where, you know, the school was pretty much, you know, functioning, and we were able to reduce some of the intervention services. But COVID has reminded us that we have to go back to some of the things we did year one, because we have a new group of students here who we haven't engaged with for 2 years. And so I would say, to be realistic, it's going to take us 2 to 3 years to really, to not only understand what the new problem is, but to also align resources meaningfully and strategically to allow kids to catch up and move ahead of standards.
Kirsten, as a parent, can I ask you, are you surprised at all with some of the numbers in this report?
No. Actually, I'll be quite honest. I have not seen the actual report just yet. I was waiting for the big reveal on that.
It's formally coming later this week. That's true. That's right. But some of the numbers I read at the outset, any surprise?
The numbers that you read, and I am very, I'm so glad that Rock the Future is counting this year or counting, you know, last year. I'm not surprised. I sat home with, you know, my two children for a year of schooling and saw how hard it was for me as a parent who is quote unquote educated, who has had time due to me losing my jobs, had time to stay at home and be right up under my children. It was hard. It's the hardest thing I've ever done. So I can only imagine what families were going through and children who didn't have the support, who didn't have, you know, access to a family member who could assist them, who didn't have a stable internet connection, who didn't have a lot of the things that my family and I have the privilege of having. And I'm not surprised to see these numbers, even over a few years. This is just the beginning of what we need to do culturally in RCSD. And the fact, again, that students were home with parents, I think this is a great time to, again, to look at, talk to parents about what was going on at home and see how we can help continuing the educational efforts in the classroom.
Yeah, and Kirsten, just one other point on that piece. We're going to try to be solutions oriented this hour, not just sort of linger on how tough some of the numbers are, but really turn our attention to what happens next. And I think one of the things that we can do productively is just try to be really direct about understanding the impact of an extended, fully remote school district, especially one with higher levels of poverty and student need. You were vocal about that last year. And from my perspective, I understood very well teachers who were nervous about going back. They were scared to go back. Last fall, before vaccination, when a lot of suburban districts had gone back, RCSD stayed fully remote. And a lot of teachers in particular were saying, we want to wait until there's more vaccination. We want to wait until there's better ventilation. There were a lot of debates about that. And I absolutely understood that from a health, just from a not getting COVID standpoint. I really do. I also know that when I look at this report card, it's hard for me to avoid thinking, you know, how many lives are going to be thrown off track? How many lives, frankly, might be lost if we've got, you know, fewer than 1 in 5 kids who can do math and can be proficient in literacy, if college ready and college choices are so low, I'm worried about lives impacted there. And so I know you had a lot to say a year ago about the decisions that were made. What do you want to say going forward in case, you know, we see community transmission up there? Still some teachers who email me every week saying, you know, we should be back to full remote right now. What is the message on that?
I think we should really look at the models and what other school districts are doing that are, I guess, similar to the Rochester City School District. I think that we really need to be engaging with families to educate on vaccination, educate on COVID. I think there's still a lot of miseducation out there, just to make sure that we're keeping our community safe. As far as, you know, going back into the classroom, I don't know. I feel like my children are safe in the classroom. So I think we should also allow families to decide whether or not they would like their children to be in the classroom. We were at one time given the option of keeping our children home, and that option was taken away from us once school began in September. And I do feel like that was not a decision that we would have preferred, but I think, you know, we have to do the best that we can to keep ourselves safe and to keep our family safe. I really don't have a concrete answer for you, but we just do our best. We're in a pandemic.
Stephanie Townsend, as the author of this State of Our Children report card, what stands out most to you right now?
I think that what stands out to me is picking up on what Dr. Nelm said, as well as what Kirsten said, is that the what is needed in order to make up for this lost time is very concerted, intentional, systematic supports in place for children, both on the academic end as well as socially and emotionally. And this is something that we are seeing throughout the country and throughout Monroe County, in the suburban districts as well. We are seeing that especially with kids in the younger ages, that teachers are saying that the kids seem like they're about 12 to 18 months behind developmentally, not academically necessarily, but developmentally. And that's completely changing the dynamics in the classroom. When instead of teaching fifth graders, it's as if they're behaving like third graders. And so we need to be very honest about that. We need to be very systematic and intentional in providing the supports and investing in what kids need.
Dr. Nelms, that's hard. Again, all of this should be hard to hear for all of us. But I understand exactly when Stephanie's saying there are fifth graders who, from what our expectations are sort of more along the lines of where third graders are because of how long they've been removed. Sometimes it's the structure of the classroom, the interaction, the expectations, whether it's schoolwork, attendance, et cetera. How do you start to deal with this? What's your strategy where you are in school?
Yeah, I think Stephanie makes an excellent point. And what I don't want to be lost is that this is happening across schools in suburban, rural, and urban settings. I mean, this is what our colleagues are talking about. Superintendent colleagues are saying that it's just the kids are taking time to readjust to what schooling is. And also schools are readjusting to understand how to better serve kids in their current state. And so we can't keep doing the same thing, expecting the same interventions and getting the same results. So what I would say is we have to lean into why Rock the Future was even formed. So Rock the Future was not created to replace a school district. It was a cross-sector partnership of over 60 community agencies who come together and wrap its resources around the district to address, you know, the current conditions of our students. What we've done is we've doubled down on community partners. We know that having community partners who understand our kids' mental and emotional health are important. So we have students, we have partners who are dealing with some of the social-emotional learning and trauma, having small group settings, dealing with how families are transitioning throughout COVID and post-COVID. I guess we're not post yet. We have healthcare professionals who are on site at East. Again, one example, there's many schools doing different things, but we have a dental lab at our school. We're giving free haircuts at East. We're dealing with pediatric services and primary care, making eyeglasses for students. The list goes on and on. And we're also starting to highlight some of the things that students have done outside of school during COVID. So today I interviewed a young lady, Gia, and she came up to me last week with a business card standing next to a security officer. And the security officer is nudging her going, pitch your idea, tell Dr. Nelms what's up. And she's shy and has her mask on. And she goes, I have a hair braiding business and it's Braids by Gia. And her Instagram is braidsbygia_. And she was telling me all about how she learned how to do braiding of hair through COVID by going on YouTube. And now she's actually working in a beauty salon doing braids, charging $125, you know, for a hairstyle. And so I videoed her today and I put it on our East page, Facebook page, just to highlight that kids weren't sitting at home doing nothing over COVID. They developed new and different skills they probably would have not developed if school was in full session. And so when I talk about schools adjusting to know who the current kids are, we have to get to know these kids and understand what they did to stay active and busy and what pushed their brain, you know, over the last 18 months. And I think if we sit and listen to the kids, and this is what we did kind of year one and two at East, they'll tell us which direction to go. But I think the adults, myself included, was taking an old approach to this problem. And we have to understand and better understand how kids learn and how resilient they are through some of their actions. So, you know, Gia is just one example of students who, you know, took advantage of the 18 months in virtual learning to learn new skills. I've seen kids learn new instruments. They're mastering things on TikTok. Like, the brain is working differently. We have to be a little bit more cognizant of how we approach our youth. But we have to first start by getting to know who they are, while also maintaining a standard for exit outcomes. So I believe this has created a new challenge for schools, and we're trying to figure it out. And I think whenever we see successes, we have to share those things more broadly. And Rock the Future is the convening body that we can share these successes and help to rapidly address some of the issues that we are finding out post-pandemic.
And so let me just ask you briefly then, when you talk about what you're offering at East, mm-hmm. beyond just classroom stuff, more health options, dental work, right?
Yep.
The dental lab, I think you said.
Vision care.
Free haircuts.
Mm-hmm.
My first question was, is this stuff working?
Mm-hmm.
But more specifically, let listeners know, when you offer free haircuts, when you offer the dental work, what that does for a kid or their family.
Yeah, absolutely. It's funny. A young man got his haircut last week, and I saw him in the hallway. He says, "I'm going to lunch feeling like a new man." You know? And so there's like this confidence that kids get, or when their teeth are cleaned or their eyes are checked, and it's just making them feel like school is a place for them. Like, it's just created for them to have the best experience, so when they leave school that they are happy and they are confident in themselves. For Gia, again, a young lady who met me a week ago, you know, shy and coy, and now I'm interviewing her about her hair business, and people are all over the world. I asked my friends to just take 10 seconds to just show her some love. Go to East Facebook page and just show her love and let her know that she is special and that her work is important. Like, those opportunities, and again, each school throughout the city, each school in this county, they're doing their own thing. You know, they're having similar type experiences. So this is not unique to East. But what I would say is these experiences allow kids to have confidence, to reconnect in school, and to know that school cares about them as a person first before what they produce academically. And that's what has been successful in schools in the past. We have to continue to do that. But it is going to take us to be honest and say what we've done in the past has not worked. And this report gives us a snapshot of where we currently are. But it's also the entire purpose of this report is to create a plan forward, as you said earlier. How do we move forward to support our youth?
So one more point on this then. I hear you when you talk about Gia and students like Gia who used the pandemic and that time away to do something different. And you want to stand up and applaud them, and that is really appropriate. I hear that. I also wonder if you have made any conclusions in your own mind about what it would take to convince you, again, that we need to go full remote again. I mean, when I hear from teachers, as I do every week still, and some in RCSD saying, too many cases, 500 cases the other day, 480 the next day, we should go full remote right now. Are you convinced of that?
I will never be convinced to go back to full remote unless we had some catastrophic outbreak. You know, I told my own kids the same thing. If I can go to Wegmans and shop, if I can go to BJ's and Sam's Club, whatever, to shop, if I can be at festivals and having dinner, I mean, the same adults who are teaching kids are the same adults who have a social life where they're engaging at their youth, their own child's soccer game, volleyball games, football games, et cetera, dance. So unless the entire world shuts down, I can't see any reason for us to not have our kids learn.
And too much cost, too much damage?
It's too much damage. And I would tell you, especially if we're the only district that shut down and the rest of the county and community are not. So, again, when I'm home on the weekends with my friends are over, or if I'm attending my kids' events, you know, I'm looking around, there's teachers there. So it can't be a double standard. We can't say, let's give our kids an opportunity to have a social life and to be engaged athletically into the arts and church, whatever. But for the kids in the city, we want to make sure we shut down. Like, I'll never be convinced of that again. And I wasn't so convinced the first time. But I know that we're going to do everything in our power to make sure that kids are there. We cannot have a shutdown and where our kids are even further behind. We'll never catch up as a community.
Let me just ask Stephanie and Kirsten about that. Stephanie, is there sufficient data now to say that districts that stayed full remote for a year plus, I don't know how to phrase it. It was a bad call. It was a harmful call. It was a damaging call. Is there enough data to say that?
I don't want a Monday morning quarterback. People made the best decisions that they could. What I would say is that there is emerging data to show that kids who were fully remote have been more negatively impacted than kids who are not. That data is still just now emerging, but it's there. And as that accumulates, I think we are going to see that kids who were fully remote for that far extended time were more negatively impacted. And the more kids were in school full time, the better that they fared.
Kirsten Brown Warren, as a parent, mm-hmm. You heard Dr. Nelm say, and he's not the superintendent of the entire district, but you heard a kind of commitment from him to at least be steadfast in advocating that schools remain open and that these needs are met in person when possible. What do you need from schools going forward, and what do you think parents need right now, Kirsten?
I think that a lot of RCSD families are not so confident in how we operate as far as equitable educational opportunities in Monroe County. For instance, my children go to church with students from other school districts. They go to Boy Scouts to do activities. And last year, these children were in school and my children were interacting with them. These kids are talking about their school day. They're talking about their, COVID protocols, and my children had none because they were at home. So they were coming to me and asking, why are we home? What's wrong with us? And we have to understand that our children see this and many are internalizing it and they're wondering, they're asking what's wrong with us. I don't know if they're asking their classrooms, but they ask me as their mother. Mm. And I think that we need to look at what are we saying to our children when we shut down RCSD, but the rest of the world is turning around us. I'll go into Wegmans, East Avenue, half people aren't wearing masks. so many places, people
are three quarters,
not
wearing
masks.
I think it's three. I think it's three quarters not wearing masks.
Like,
yeah.
And I'm not trying to bring that up, but if we're going, we can't do that. And my children are noticing, why aren't these people wearing masks? Why aren't they keeping us safe? And to even, to bring up shutting down school, like I said, when the rest of the county is turning, restaurants are open. I've gone to restaurants. I'm not saying I like to eat out. I'm being safe where I can, but I just don't see the argument. I don't see why we should even be discussing shutting down schools at this point when it looks like it does around us, despite what's going on during this pandemic.
Yeah. We're talking about Rock the Future's annual report card, which comes out at a time when so much has changed and been affected by this pandemic, especially in the Rochester City School District. And this is a coalition that's been tracking data and progress, what they've hoped to see, big strides, some cases just incremental progress, over the last decade. And everything from those academic markers, early grade literacy, middle grade math, high school graduation, to family guidance, family support, structure, reading at home. These are all things that are being measured. And right now, a lot of the metrics have taken a big step back. And they're being honest about that. This is not a coalition that decided they're going to sort of hold that data back, see where we are in a year. No, they're putting it out there and they're saying, let's go. Like, let's put this out there. Let's be honest. Let's confront it and let's go. Jackie Campbell is the Alliance Director of Rock the Future with us now in studio. Jackie, it's wonderful to have you as always. And I've been asking the other guests, and I'll ask you, was there anything in here that surprised or sort of specifically worried you, or did you anticipate, it's pretty clear that we've been hurting in this pandemic, that kids have been hurting?
So good afternoon, yeah. Evan, and thanks for having me. I was not surprised by what was in the report card. And I believe that even before the pandemic, we were just making small progress.
Incremental progress.
Right.
Yeah.
I think not so much what surprised me, but what I was pleased to see was the level of cooperation and collaboration in our community, because I think that the narrative is that we don't do things together and we don't do that well, and I think that we do, and we need to do more of that.
So as we look at just the academic markers, Jackie, let me start with you on this, but let me go ahead and reread some of this in case listeners are just joining us. This is a set of data that goes back the better part of 10 years now, and so they've got in the new report, they've got a section that says where we started and then where we are. And then just a check or an X on whether progress has been made. So I'm just going to go down a bunch of measures here, and let's talk about what we do about some of this. Sure. So let's start with a question of just basic competency and literacy in math. Early grade literacy. Rochester City School District third graders proficient on the state assessment. Where we started about a decade ago, 24%. Now, 18%. In middle grade math, eighth graders proficient on state assessments. Where we started about a decade ago, 20%. Where we are now, 17%. That is tough, Jackie. That's tough. What does that say for the kids who are in that 80% plus, who are not proficient? What does that say for their futures?
I worry
about them.
Right. I do as well. And so one thing I would say is that this is one measure. And so it's important to put that in context. So the state assessment happens once a year in a very controlled environment. Are RCSD kids doing well on that assessment? Based on the numbers, we would say no. But if we look across, and I'm not making any excuses, I just want to make sure I say that, but when we look across the state, even the state rate is not where we would want to see it, right? And even when we look at suburban districts, it's not where we would want to see it. Definitely, we want that to be improved for the city. I think one of the things that we have been able to do over time is really try to dig deep on what were some of the factors impacting the rate. And one of the things that we know is, one of the things that the district is working on is getting a consistent curriculum. So mm-hmm. in a district where you have a lot of transiency, that you have students who move from one school to the next, to then show up at a new school and there's not a consistent curriculum, really puts that particular student back. And the rate of transiency is really, really high. So when we think about comparing the city school district and other districts, we have to look at other external factors that are impacting students as well, right?
Well, on that subject of consistent curriculum, let me turn to Dr. Nelms, because this is important. And stay with me here. I'm going to try to be careful, but I want to put something to you. I'm very curious where you are on this.
All right.
There are debates across the country about how we test, what we test, what are the subjects we test. California has debated pulling back certain AP and advanced metrics because there's a movement that says it's too white. It's very white-centric. It's very European-centric. And I guess what I want to say is I get that. I mean, the people who have written the tests for a long time are usually white, usually European descended, et cetera. There's a lot of different ways to be successful in life, not just to score well on math and certain proficiency tests. I get all of that. But then I also get the backlash that says, and some of the backlash that comes from Black and brown families that says, hey, let's still have the standards that we should have. Let's still hold the high standards. Do you think we need to throw out assessments? When I look at eighth grade math, when I look at third grade literacy proficiency, do you look at that and say, oh my God, like we are nowhere close where we need to be? Or do you say, you know, those are probably racist standards anyway?
I wouldn't go as far as saying racist standards. I would say that there are three like major buckets when we talk about education. It's curriculum, then there's instruction, and there's assessment.
Yep.
All right, so CIA. All right. So the curriculum is like the roadmap, and it is the content that is taught within within schools. I believe that content should be anti-racist. I believe that content should accurately reflect the contributions of all citizens. That content should be somewhat destroyed and rebuilt or revised in a way that is representative. And I don't think people adding on some ancillary materials and saying, here's the core and this is the other stuff. I mean, make it truly part of the core. The core text and the core assignments and lessons. Then you have instruction, and that means that the teachers have to find a way to make the content make sense for kids so the kids can make sense of it for themselves. And once we know that kids are making sense of it for themselves, that's where the assessment comes in. What has been often an issue is that, to Jackie's point, either there's little to no curriculum where the content is being emphasized, or the content in the curriculum is lacking representation, so kids don't like reading it and it's boring and it's dismissive. teachers themselves may not feel comfortable teaching certain topics or dealing with certain things that are engaging to kids, so they just choose not to teach it. And so again, now your kids have boring content and are now sitting in boring lessons. And then when the assessment comes, then the kids are being measured on something that's not engaging to them. And so I think as we look at restructuring the school experience for students and staff, we have to be honest about its archaic ways and then redefine it in a way that allows teachers to feel successful in the classroom. I mean, I haven't met one teacher that doesn't want to be successful. And so if a teacher says, hey, if I'm going to teach this content and I can teach it in this way and my students are going to be successful, I'll do it every single day of the year. I just think there's just these disconnects between who our kids are and what's engaging to them. Our teachers, if they didn't get that type of training in college, then how are we giving professional development that's ongoing and iterative over the course of their career so they can adjust? And then how are the assessments being structured in a way that honors that process between students and staff and community? And I think that's how I would restructure the entire system. And I think that...
But you're still going to test certain things.
Yeah, I think there's two types of assessment. You have assessment for learning or an of learning. Mm-hmm. So the of learning, I said this before on the show, of learning is kind of, it's passive. It's already happened, and it's a measure in time. That's a state assessment. So when the kid takes the state assessment in May, and I get the results as a school official in October, there's nothing I can do with that data at that point. It doesn't inform anything that I've done. The data comes... It's after the kids have already left my classroom, so there's nothing that I can do to change that experience for that kid. Assessment for learning is more iterative, and so you have different measuring dipsticks, benchmarks along the way, so I can continue to adjust as a teacher so that the kid makes that makes those intentional moves.
Yeah.
So kids can meet a standard at the end of the year. So I am all in favor for assessment for learning, because it helps kids grow. And so you have to have smaller tests, smaller check-ins. And those assessments should be common. So I should know what a fourth grader is doing in school A, in school B. So as a system, I can say our fourth graders are doing really well at this standard and not so well at this standard. So we're going to catch up these kids on this standard next year in fifth grade. You know, so it's more strategic in nature. But the of learning standards, I'm not a huge fan of those either, because there's not much we can do with them. If they were given in January, results are given back in February, and we can take March to June to work with students, I'll be all for it. But in the current state, the assessments really don't give us a lot of data that can help students in the now. It's too passive of a standard in a process.
Okay, so I think what I'm hearing you say is it's troubling where the numbers are, but it's also not very helpful to the students or their teachers, and we could be doing this differently.
Right. Fair. Exactly. Yep. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Absolutely right.
I think we're all going to jump in on this. I hear Stephanie Townsend. Let me get Stephanie, and I know Jackie and Kirsten are going to want to talk about it. Go ahead, Stephanie.
Yeah. So I think it's also important to keep in mind what these numbers are relative to. So for the early grade literacy, which we measure in third grade, only about 50% of New York students statewide test proficient. So yes, Rochester City School District students are lower than that. But for me, speaking as a psychologist, if only half of third graders test proficient statewide, there's something wrong with the assessment. It's not a developmentally appropriate assessment. So we've got to remember, sometimes people hear this 18% of third graders were proficient, and their assumption is, 80 or 90% of kids in other districts are proficient. But that's just not the case.
But what is it in the suburbs? I think people may be wondering, what's the suburban city split?
It is higher in the suburbs, absolutely. But again, it's not like it's up in the 80-90%. The other thing that we have to be careful about is when whatever assessment we're talking about in the city of Rochester is we tend to present these numbers district-wide. That's valid. There's a reason we do that. It is a measure of the district as a whole. However, the variation from one school building to another is oftentimes tremendous. And so Kirsten, rightfully so, raised the issue of equity between the city and the suburban school districts. That's absolutely something that we as a region, as a community, have to tackle. The fact is there's also a lack of equity within the city school district. When you have five high schools that are graduating 80% or more of their students, that is on par with the state. That is on par. Some of the Rochester City School Districts graduate more of their students than some of the suburban districts do. That's a story that, A, doesn't get told very often. And it gets lost when we look at everything district-wide. We really need to start looking more at the data by school district. And if we do that for something like high school graduation, what we see is there are a small number of schools, there is one in particular because it is the largest school in the district, that needs intensive support. But you've got five schools in the Rochester City School District that are on par or outperform the suburban school districts when it comes to graduation. We've got to look at those numbers, take them seriously, because no matter what school building a child attends, they should all be able to be successful. And right now, there's a big difference depending on what school building a Rochester child attends.
Jackie Campbell, what do you think?
I agree that there is a lot of variation. I did want to also say that over time, through Rock the Future, we looked at what was going on with third grade assessment, and the district is a partner with Rock the Future. And so right before the pandemic, they purchased and went through a big process to identify a curriculum that could be consistently applied through all of their elementary schools. So you have a lot of progress, but we're not going to see those numbers turn around sort of right away, especially with the number of students that took the assessment last year and this year, that they're so low that you really can't do anything with the data in terms of the number of students. But I do think that we've, as a community, we've accomplished more than I would say that we have not accomplished. Are there still tremendous needs? Absolutely. But we have done a lot together. And so that's what our event on Wednesday is about. It's about celebrating what we've been able to accomplish and to really acknowledge, without sugarcoating it, that we still have a long way to go.
Yeah. Kirsten, do you want to weigh in on these issues too? Go ahead.
Yes, I'd love to. Two things I want to bring up are, first, language barriers. And this is across, across the district, within our schools. And when we look at comparing our CSD numbers with our suburban school districts, our CSD has a large number of Spanish-dominant students. And even there are certain schools that have more Spanish-dominant students. My children go to school number 12, which has the OLA Spanish Immersion Program. So my children are in a classroom with half students, at least when they're in kindergarten. A lot of these students, this is their first introduction to English, is when they get to kindergarten. And when we look at the performance of those students together, it became so eye-opening to me, especially during the pandemic when my children had homework in Spanish. And I speak a little bit of Spanish, but I now have a fifth grader, I started to have difficulty helping him with his homework. And this is something that I didn't really face. I can help with English. I can help him figure out what this word means, look that up. But in Spanish, I kind of, halted myself and said, wow, this is what families who do not speak English as their primary language might have difficulty helping their children. So we have to look at the number of children that we have who are taking these assessments who don't necessarily have the English language support surrounding them. Maybe if they don't have enough in the school building, because we certainly need more English language support for those Spanish dominant students. And then in the home environment, what they are able to do to augment their learning at home or what they're not able to do. Also, I want to talk about the strength of the opt-out movement. When we look at these assessment numbers at school number 12, we find that a lot of our higher performing students, their families opt them out of testing because of the research that they've done, because of what they know about state assessments. And not every parent has access to that knowledge or knows what about state assessments or has done that type of research. So we look at some of the students who aren't taking those tests. Are those students, some of them possibly, who are going to be getting those higher scores, perhaps? I'm just looking at, the data from our school. I know that my children will be taking tests. The only time I opted them out was this past school year. I just saw it completely unnecessary to add in another layer of stress to a very stressful year, but they will be taking state assessments from this point forward. I feel like whatever assessments are offered, assessing is a part of life, and that's just how I see it. And as long as it does not stress them out or make them feel, less than, they will be taking them.
Talking about this this very important week as Rock the Future rolls out this annual report card that is really a look at the last decade and the set of metrics and standards that have been pretty toughly impacted by the pandemic. Though I think to Jackie Campbell's point and our guests, the point they've been making is this has been a 10-year march of incremental progress, not often as fast as they want it to be, but it's a very important little pivot point here for the community. And I promised we'd be talking about solutions. So let me ask all of our guests and Sean Nelms, chair of Rock the Future. Let me start with you. So what has to happen? You talked about your own school, what's happening at East. What has to happen district-wide now? And part of that is a question for parents, families, et cetera. I mean, these metrics include ready families. And I'll read some of them because these are where we're seeing some pretty good progress here. Reading at home. Pre-K families who read with their child at least once a week. 96% a decade ago. It's 98% now. That's a phenomenal number. Family support. RCSD 13-plus-year-olds who say their family gives help and support when they need it. It's gone from 82 to 83%. Incremental progress, but that's, I want to believe that's a good number. Family guidance, 13-plus-year-olds who say there are clear rules in their family. 81% a decade ago, 85% now. And FAFSA completion, this is still way too low, but it's happening. RCSD seniors who completed their financial aid forms by March, a decade ago it was only 1 in 3, 33%. Now it's 44%. I mean, it's got to get higher, but still, I want to feel like those metrics are going in the right direction. Right. What do we need to see district-wide and whoever the stakeholders are, parents, caregivers, teachers, schools?
I said this earlier. I mean, what makes Rock the Future so much needed and so successful is that it's a coalition of over 60 community partners. And what we need is for the district, who is one of our 60 partners, to come to the table and to be transparent and honest about what they need with a plan, and then the partners to wrap themselves around the district's plan and to help influence it also, not coming just to do the work of the district, but to do the work with the district. And to identify how to make these metrics move. And I would say that Dr. Meyer Small, the current superintendent of RCSD, and her team, led by Dr. Kathy Black, they have leaned in to Rock the Future in a way that perhaps some of their other superintendents have not. And they have said, hey, this is a critical resource. We want to make sure that it's working for us. Here's what we need to work on, and how can you help us achieve those goals? So much so that this last year we added the two healthcare systems to Rock the Future as conveners, because child health, whole child health, was so critically important, but also it was identified by the school district and by the community as an essential partner that should be at the table. And so Jackie worked very hard to get those individuals to commit with staff and resources to help us better understand the intersection between education and whole child health. And so I think a critical step is to continue to engage RCSD, and for RCSD to continue to engage Rock the Future in very authentic and vulnerable and transparent ways, so we can actually do the work and see these numbers move across not just X and O's of academics, but also the socio-emotional behavioral health also.
Jackie Campbell, what do you want to see if we're really going to move these numbers in a different direction? Who do you think of first? Do you think of parents first? Do you think of the kids first? Do you think of teachers, administrators? Do you think of government and funding and support? What's the top of mind?
Well, you said all my.
Well, I don't know what what stands out as number one for you.
Number one are the children and kids are always number one, but I know that children they don't raise themselves. they grow in the context of their families. And if we're ever going to be able to get where we want to, we talk about the third horizon, right? If we ever want to get there, we have to really authentically engage parents and family members. And, you know, we do have a shift in thinking that has happened in the community. Everybody now is saying parent engagement, parent engagement. For Rock the Future, our language is parent leadership. Because when we get to the point where parents are actually leading with us, and we understand our role is to support the parent in doing what their role is, then we will have, I think, the willingness in the community to actually move and hit those critical benchmarks. So it's family for me, family first.
Well, I appreciate that. And I'm with you. I mean, I always think kids first. After all the debate about how we teach, what the metric should be, what we should be testing, at a very baseline, when I see a lot of third graders still can't read, I feel my heart aches for those kids. And society eventually is going to look at those kids as they become adults with scorn, as if they failed when I think they were failed by others. That's generally how I feel when I look at that.
No, I totally agree. But I look at this as the early grade literacy mark, this is an all community action.
Yeah.
It's not just what the schools do. It's what how the community is. And so part of that is sort of the economic condition of some of our families. So if you're a child in poverty, you are less likely to have certain supports, right? And some of those are in schools and some of those are in our very community. So it is a full-on press. Our goal is to reach 6,000 parents by the end of June 2022. 6,000 represents approximately a third of the households in the city of Rochester. And we believe that with all of our partners working together, we can actually hit that. We have to do it together.
Well, let's talk about how more parents can get involved. Kirsten Brown Warren is the parent leader with PECAN, the Parent Engagement Collaborative Action Network. You know, obviously, it's, you know, parents love and want the best for their kids. A lot of them are stretched with different jobs, different life circumstances. How can more people get involved, Kirsten?
Well, I think one thing, we have to look at our parents as experts. A lot of times, you know, decisions are being made around parents, even behind our backs. And parents need to be engaged in decision making. And the critical time is now, especially with children having been at home with parents. Now is the time to ask, how does your child learn? You know, what works for your child? What doesn't? I've heard so many parents just, you know, mind blown at what their children either can or cannot do, or how much, you know, they are able to focus or are not able to focus, or what alternative things they were able to do with their families. I pulled my youngest off of Zoom because that worked best for him. My oldest was able to, you know, stay in the Zoom and liked being engaged that way. And so that's the information that I was able to then give to my child's teachers. And I think teachers really are the low-hanging fruit for parent engagement. It's wonderful that agencies can do all that they do, that our district superintendents can do, but we really need to work on that parent-to-family engagement. I grew up in an era of progress reports. You know, my mother got a report every week or every 2 weeks on how I was doing. And if, you know, family teachers are not set up to communicate with families to help their children, to help children succeed along with families, then let's give our teachers the resources and tools to make that happen. I think for me, from what I see, it is the key. Again, the low-hanging fruit is to really get our teachers and families engaged in the building. And all the other stuff is wonderful, but for me, that's where it is.
And then maybe we'll see one metric change. Here's one metric that is exactly the same after a decade. 13-plus-year-olds in the Rochester City School District who say they feel like they matter to people in the community. Only 57% a decade ago, 57% today. That number has to get higher. Kids have to know they are loved, that the community cares. That's got to change. And Stephanie Townsend, you know, again, as the data person, is there something that could happen that is most likely in the short term to impact a lot of these different metrics we've been talking about upward, whether that's funding or different interventions? Is there a low-hanging fruit option here?
Absolutely, there is. And I do want to underscore that there is ample data to show the impact of families, of summer and after school programs, as well as of communities and neighborhoods. But in the schools, that's where we can most immediately and rapidly make some changes that will help all children in the district. Every student needs to be assessed in reading and math. They need to be immersed in grade level work, not work they should have been doing a year ago, but in grade level work and supported in order to be able to succeed at it. They need to have high intensity tutoring in reading. They need what are called acceleration academies oftentimes high intensity tutoring in math, acceleration academies in reading. And that student growth has to be frequently assessed and shared with both the students.
That's what Sean's talking about. Yeah, that's what Sean's talking about. They have to, maybe that's a good place to end, Stephanie Townsend. If we don't change the system and there's only once a year assessments or whatever, there's not that sort of assessing for learning. It sounds like a lot of people are kind of left in the dark on trying to figure out where are we, where do we need to go?
Yeah. And that's where what Kirsten says about the communication. The fact is Rochester City School District does many assessments throughout the year. But that information needs to be used in the classroom, and it needs to be shared with the families in a way that they can take action as well.
Sean Nelms is chair of Rock the Future. Where can people learn more online? Oh, look, kick it over to Jackie.
Rockthefuture.org, our website.
Rockthefuture.org, the official report released later this week. Sean, what's the name of the student who did the hair?
Gia, Braids by Gia _.
Braids by Gia _ on Instagram. And, you know, if you go to the East Facebook page, I know people are sharing love, but to me the lesson is let kids in your community, not just your own kids, let people know they are loved and cared for.
That's right.
And find your place to support them. There's so much happening. I appreciate Jackie's point that there's a lot of agencies and people pulling in the same direction. But there's a lot of work to be done as the pandemic goes on. Jackie, thanks for talking to us. Alliance Director of Rock the Future, thank you very much.
My pleasure. Thanks for inviting
me. As always, Dr. Nelms, Chair of Rock the Future, thank you, sir.
Thank you. Go Bills.
Kirsten Brown, always got to get that. Kirsten Brown Warren, thank you as always for joining us, Kirsten.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
Stephanie Townsend, thank you for sharing the data here. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
More connections coming up.